Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman. That's getting off to a good start tonight. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Oh, I'll tell you, folks, I spent pretty much all day on the mower today. My lawnmower broke almost 3 weeks ago while I was finishing up, and I didn't even quite finish then because the bearing that drives my mower deck went out. And had a special order part, and then it was the wrong part, and then I had a special order more parts, and then I needed another part. What a mess. So I had a small jungle to mow down today. I'm pretty sure that if I'd let that get any longer, there'd been either EPA trying to protect my land as a nature preserve or a swamp preserve or whatever, or some Sierra Club protesters complaining about chopping down a rainforest. Anyway, this is the My View Matters Radio Network. This is Liberty Unbridled. I am Ken Molman, and thank you all for tuning in again to the show tonight. We've got a handful of topics queued up, and I apologize. Work's been kind of crazy, and so I know there's a whole lot going on out there, and if there's something that's really burning that we haven't gotten to by the bottom of the hour, feel free to call in. The number here is 858-6 bottom of the hour after the break. So, to get things started, as always, we start with the randomly generated political rhetoric from the political rhetoric generator. This week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, I will work for an America where socialists and fat cats cannot sabotage our cellular plans. For the record, I'd work for an America where socialists and fat cats can't sabotage anything. But, hey, that's the randomly generated rhetoric this week. Our spurious correlation, our random correlation, which we've been doing now for a couple months now or better, is that for the years 2007 to 2010, the number of females in Wisconsin who slipped or tripped to their death inversely correlates with visitors to SeaWorld Florida. And I had a laugh when I saw this one because there's been a lot of talk about the whole war on women thing. And, poorly applied science, where we're using correlation as causation, would say that, hey, because you didn't go to SeaWorld Florida in the last 4 years or 7 years, I guess, you're making women slip and trip to their death in Wisconsin. Obviously, that's not really related, and that's the whole point of the spurious correlations. Every week we show that correlation and causation are two entirely different things. Election coverage, lots and lots and lots and lots of stuff going on. And the funny thing is the media is not covering everything. It's been extremely frustrating to me, especially since I am specifically supporting the listed on the ballot, David Patterson, the Libertarian candidate, who's been on the show a couple of times in the past. The media seems to all but ignore the fact that he exists and is trying to all but pretend like he's just not there. And it's kind of an interesting phenomenon because there's really no reason to ignore that he's there. I've talked to a handful of reporters about this, and basically their response was, well, he's not really changing the outcome of the race. He's getting an equal take from each side, and so we don't care. He's polling at 10%, which isn't enough to win, and he's not throwing the election one way or the other, so we're just going to ignore that he exists. Which, of course, causes a problem for getting above 10%, which is, if the media is not reporting that you exist, how do people learn that you exist? And I've heard from so many people. I just witnessed it yesterday down at the Take Back Kentucky meeting in Elizabethtown. There was some folks that just kind of meandered into the meeting, were interested in what was going on. And David Patterson was a speaker there, as was Jamie Comer this past, or yesterday, I guess it was. And Comer did a great job, as usual. And after Comer left, David got to speak and do some Q&A. And There were a couple of folks there that just kind of wandered up, and one of them was like, "Hey, I've never heard of this guy, and I like what he has to say. I'd like to be a point of contact in this county to help spread the word. How do I get involved?" And so, it's funny because there are a lot of people looking for an alternative, a legitimate alternative. Legitimate alternative is out there, but the media isn't reporting on it. Now, you may not like libertarians, and that's okay. Now, chances are listening to this show, unless you just like to get really mad and, whatever, chances are you're probably libertarian leaning if you're listening to this show. But understand there are plenty of people who aren't, and that's cool. Hey, whatever. But as there are only three options listed on the ballot, there's 600, there are three. Is it really that difficult? Is it really that much more of a burden to look and get the opinion of the third person that people have to obviously choose from? It's funny because the Courier Journal put out, they're one of the ones that are doing this, the Courier Journal put out a story, "Don't sit out the election. The election's important." Oh my gosh. Because there's a lot of people who are just planning on sitting it out because they don't know there's another option. Grimes and McConnell don't excite them. They don't know that there's another option. But the media, they haven't bothered to tell you that there's another option. And so it's entertaining, I guess, in a way. They put out a big story about, "Oh, well, don't sit out the election. It's important. And oh my gosh, down ticket races and all the doo-doo-doo-doo-doo," talking about how you need to go out and vote. Well, had they bothered to contact us, the libertarians, we could have added something very crucially important to that story. The fact that petitions gathered in Louisville for David Patterson, petition signatures that were gathered on his petition, what we found was about an 80% failure rate for people under the age of 30. Now, they did not fail because they weren't legitimate voters, but they failed because they weren't registered to vote where they believed they were registered to vote. Which means that based on that sample size, that's a pretty good sample size, really. It was a lot of people. That's why there were over 9,100 signatures. Based on that sample size, that says that 80% of Louisvillians, is that how you say that word? People who live in Louisville, who are under the age of 30, are not registered at the correct address. That's kind of a big freaking deal. It's kind of a big freaking deal. It would have been something good to report on. Now, you know, the folks that read the Courier Journal, they have no idea. And why not? Because they didn't bother to ask. The deadline to re-register is coming up. I can't remember exactly when it is. I want to say it's the very beginning of October, I think. I probably should know that, but hey, I'm registered to vote. And everybody I know is registered to vote properly. I've done what I can do, personally. The media misses out on when they arbitrarily decide, well, you know, we just don't care about this guy because he's only polling 10% only. You know, only 1 in 10 people are going to be like, yeah, we don't like either of those. We're voting for that other person. That's no big deal. Which, based on the math, is like over 100,000 people or something like that. But, oh my gosh, don't sit out the election. I'm not going to tell you what's going on, and we're not going to give you any information that might make it so that if you go to the poll and try to vote, you're going to find out you're not eligible to vote because you're registered at the wrong address. Couldn't learn that. Meanwhile, there was a Pikeville debate. It was a debate invite for Pikeville, Kentucky, and which, if you don't know, is like the farthest point east in the entire state. And McConnell turned it down. Grimes accepted. McConnell turned it down. Well, I can tell you on Friday, the debate organizers reached out to the Patterson campaign, and the Patterson campaign, so I've heard, has accepted the debate. And that's kind of a big deal, a debate. Now, what'll be interesting to see is if Ms. Grimes decides to stay there or not, or if she suddenly has a schedule conflict as well. But it's amazing to me. It's amazing to me that KET is still staying on, you know, their path, claiming that their pre-established criteria, the ones they came up with in July, it's not very pre-established, just for the record. Pre-established criteria, by the way, should be set before the election cycle begins. Otherwise, you're changing the rules in the middle of the game. That's a common sense, obvious thing. But the point is that KET is still there. You had the ACLU brought out a letter, you know, basically condemning the actions of KET for changing everything around and increasing the amount of money minimum to $100,000. And now it's funny. The funniest part of all is they claim that they can't change those rules now because that would be subjective and they wouldn't be pre-established. Dude, you changed it well after the Patterson campaign reached out to you and told you back in March that they were running. So whatever. There was a big hubbub. The papers, while they ignore David Patterson because he's not throwing the election one way or the other, and he's only polling 10%, to do about a write-in candidate who's from up here in northern Kentucky, who has been spouting racist statements, negative statements about people who happen to be of Jewish heritage or who are black. And the Patterson campaign put out a news release condemning the words, saying that, you know, we believe people have the right to run and express themselves. But basically saying that it's, and it's true, let me read the release, that he said that, while I firmly believe that every person has a right to their opinion and that every person has a right to run for political office, I also want to express my extreme disappointment that even in today's day and age, there are still people who judge others based on class or ethnic heritage. We are all human beings, and we all belong to the human race. And then Patterson also went on to explain that, you know, it's that type of criteria, which is why KET created these new criteria along the way. They basically were trying to get the Grimes versus McConnell debate. And he called on Grimes and McConnell's camps to ask KET to have him be allowed to participate. Didn't see that anywhere, did you? No, you didn't. The media, again, hey, why do you need to know what's going on? We've got our media narrative. It's McConnell versus Grimes, and McConnell's pulling away. And, oh, my gosh, this other person's a racist. Well, let's, you know, do the whole error of omission thing here and make sure to only mention that Grimes and McConnell and a racist walk into a bar. It's not really into a bar, but the point is that the only people mentioned in the story are Grimes, McConnell, and a racist. And now all of a sudden, the error of omission, with the lie by omission, is that the Libertarian candidate is the racist, which is not true at all. And it's extremely frustrating to see the media just playing this game and playing along. I called into Ed Springsteen's show, one of the other folks on the network here. Ed actually is the owner of the network and has shows two nights a week. Correctly, he does Monday and Wednesday? Or maybe it's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Maybe he does three nights a week. I should probably know that. Dale does Tuesday, so yes, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And I don't remember which day I called in, but we talked about this at length. about the media narrative. And after that conversation, I found an interesting, you know, infographic picture thing on Facebook, which I did not go back and check through and whatever. But David Gregory basically says that, you know, the problem with the media today is they get a narrative set and they will not deviate from that narrative. And the narrative in this race, despite the fact that David Paterson declared for office back in August of 2013, despite the fact that he was nominated at convention and it was publicized, the convention was publicized, that his nomination was publicized, that his campaign reached out to the media and said, hey, we're now officially the candidate. Despite all of that, the narrative was already set. It was going to be Grimes versus McConnell. It's the reason that, the Democratic Party made it very clear that they were going to get behind Grimes, which is why Ed Marksberry bowed out and attempted to run as an independent. And he found out that this petitioning stuff is horrible. And so his voice was silenced by the public machine, by the media, by the ridiculous petitioning process. For other offices, a number of times. I get really frustrated at the way that the process is controlled. I get really frustrated at the way many people just aren't aware of just how controlled the process is. T criteria. We're polling 5% or raise 10,000 or get, you know, news coverage or have a website with relevant stuff. That was their original criteria and be a declared candidate. That was their original criteria. And then the day after the primary election, where KET had people at both campaigns' camps and working actively to invite them to debate on KET, all of a sudden the details change. All of a sudden the thresholds change the next day. Huh. And that's when they get silly. And then they go up even sillier, and then they went back to not quite as, you know, it went from silly to sillier to ridiculous and then back down to just sillier. It's frustrating. And the number of good liberty people out there, and make no mistake, there are liberty people on the left, there are liberty people on the right. The number of good liberty people out there that lean a little left or a little right, they're going to hold their nose and vote for Grimes or hold their nose and vote for McConnell. Guys, nothing's going to change. What do you hope to gain from that? Probably the most laughable one is McConnell. And it's only because he has a 30-year track record to prove what he's going to do. The number of people who act like, you know, well, Mitch has been trying real hard. Really? He's been trying real hard back in from 01 to 07 when the Republicans controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and they crammed through the Patriot Act and all this garbage and the spending and everything in the wars. You really think that Mitch McConnell's on your side? Really? Boy, you know, when he becomes Senate Majority Leader, everything will get better, because that's not what happened the last time. But this time it'll certainly happen, because apparently voters are insane or people weren't paying attention. And that's the real problem. A lot of these folks weren't paying attention 7 years ago, 14 years ago. They don't remember because they didn't watch it. They didn't see it. It's frustrating. Folks, it's public record. Public record. She will not go on the record. There was an article in the Courier Journal about that, too. Of course, they didn't put David's position on Obamacare in there, but she won't come out against Obamacare. And she's not going to. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Take Back Kentucky meeting yesterday. Take Back Kentucky voted to endorse David Patterson in the U.S. Senate race. And obviously, they weren't fooled by the BS. They know the records. They know what will happen. They get it. They, I believe, made the right choice. So, speaking of Obamacare, and I put this up on my website or on my Facebook page. I'm going to take a look to see if anybody's actually responded to it or not. But I asked the question, do you think that Obamacare would have passed were it not for the explicit ban on funding abortions? And you can go vote on that right now if you'd like. I'll check on that here again at the end of the show. But that's the question. It's not about whether you support Obamacare or not. But if you remember back in the debate on Obamacare, we had, boy, there were a lot of different little things. But one of the big things was whether or not abortions would be taxpayer funded. This was a big, big deal. I mean, it was a big debate, especially in areas like here in Northern Kentucky, where there's a large Catholic community. And for that matter, Cincinnati, which is a little bit more of a liberal Catholic community. There was a big debate over this. In fact, the organization Susan B. Anthony List actually ran ads against an incumbent Democratic congressman, Steve Driehaus, in his reelection campaign after Obamacare was passed, saying that Obamacare would pay for abortions. And Mr. Driehaus sued Susan B. Anthony List, claiming that that was untrue, that he would not have voted for it had it not included the ban on funding abortions, and that it violated Ohio law to make that claim. And so he that lawsuit's actually still going, which I think is pretty entertaining. I mean, we're talking about what was the boy? Let's see. The lawsuit goes back to 2010, and it's still going and going and going and going. And I think that's interesting, also in part because the ACLU is on the side of Susan B. Anthony List, because Susan B. Anthony List is claiming the Ohio law about making false statements is unconstitutional. But the funnier part is at this point, it's not a false statement. Because it came out this week that Obamacare, despite the law claiming to specifically prohibit using taxpayer dollars to fund abortions, being used. And it's almost laughable. Because of course it is. Of course it is. Even though the law says it's not allowed, of course it is. Because think about it. It's a government agency. It's a bureaucracy. It's big, it's huge, it's new, it's not established, everything's a big old mess. And so the Government Accountability Organization, GAO, came out with a statement that Obamacare abortion rules are widely ignored. It was reported in Politico 5 days ago. It's kind of a big deal that at least one House rep would not have voted, or claims that he would not have voted, for Obamacare. And the question becomes, how many others would there have been? Would there have been any in the Senate? Because that was only one vote in the Senate. kind of a big deal, regardless of your stance on abortion. The question remains, do you think that Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, however you want to call it, would have actually passed were the provision banning taxpayer funding of abortions not inserted into the bill? I would submit to you that it would not have, because I can tell you for a fact that there were certain Catholic organizations that were specifically running ads in favor of Obamacare, using donations made to the Catholic Church and to Catholic organizations to run those ads. And the Catholic Church is against abortion. They most certainly would not have been running those ads were it not for that specific ban. And the real question is, who's going to do anything about it? The GAO report found that in Connecticut, Hawaii, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and Vermont, all insurance plans offered on the exchanges cover abortions above and beyond the exceptions for rape, incest, and a mother's life. The health law required the Office of Personnel Management to ensure there was at least one health insurance policy in each state that did not cover abortion except in those three circumstances. Surprises you? I hope you're not surprised. If you're surprised, well, I mean, you know, the government. This is a pretty common occurrence. But I don't know. I just, once again, to show that anytime a new law is proposed, and they always say, well, you know, we've set a limit on this, that the limits are always ignored in one way or another, either through the bureaucracy, either through some sort of civil rights appeal that, you know, to get that removed, or, you know, there's always a slippery slope as well. But in any case, any program that sounds bad, except, oh, well, except we put this one firewall in, so it's okay. Firewall from, don't expect that to actually survive very long. Because seriously, it never does. And this is just the latest example. There are others. There are plenty of others. There will always be others. Always. Always doing this. Let's see here. We don't have any new numbers on the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Here's something from last week I wanted to get to. I don't know if I got to this last week or not. I still have the tab open here. So red light cameras, industry fighting a citizen's vote. People are trying to put a petition, get a petition together to end red light cameras. Red light cameras sound good. Again, they don't work. It's policing for profit. It's a really bad plan. And people are trying to get rid of them. By the way, the companies get a percent of the revenue generated by those cameras. Oh, yes, they do. They're working to stop that. So, I don't know. It doesn't surprise me. Not one bit. This was something I found, and I want to get to this, and then we'll take a break. And, of course, your calls at 858-683-1326. Inflation over the course of 100 years from 1913, when the Fed was created, 1913 to 2013, the price of bread increased 2,439%. The price of potatoes increased 3,819%. The price of sugar increased 1,078%. Let's see here. Chuck roast, 2,381%. Round steak, 375. Sirloin, 2,297. The point is, there's been a lot of inflation. It's slow. It's creeping. And people don't really realize how much the cost of goods has increased over the past 100 years. Nor do they realize that the cost of goods, the value of a dollar didn't really change before 1913, before the Federal Reserve. It changed a little teeny tiny bit, tied to a physical commodity, gold. And gold ensured that your dollar was worth a dollar. At times it was hard. Your dollar was a dollar. You knew what that dollar was. Today the problem is that there is nothing backing the dollar. It's the full faith and credit of the United States government, which is almost laughable to say anymore. And so the dollar continues to go down in value because the Federal Reserve continues to print more dollars. There was a big chunk, if you remember back during the bailout discussion, to give you an idea how this works, during the bailout discussion, there were two bills that were, it went through twice, right? The first time it failed. The bank bailout failed the first time it was attempted. For that same day that it was reported, hey, the bank bailouts failed, it was also reported that the Federal Reserve just poofed into existence, just created it on the computer, $700 billion, $700 billion, billion with a B, billion dollars, just poofed it into existence. Over half of that money went from our Federal Reserve over to central banks in the European Union to prop up banks in Europe. Over half of that money. Now, what did that mean for you? Well, good question. I'm trying to remember how many dollars were in circulation at the time, and now they don't even track that number anymore. After March of 2006, and I still clearly remember this, March of 2006, they stopped keeping track of the big M numbers. It was M1, M2, M3, all the way through M6. And basically, M6 is everything, right? It's M1 is just the number of physical dollars, right? How many physical dollars have been printed? M6 included everything, including debts, the computerized ones and zeros, the everything. And in March of 2006, they quit reporting M6. That's when I knew the recession. That's when I knew something was very, very wrong, actually. When I saw that report, I went, uh-oh, that's not good. Because there's no reason not to report that number. If things are good, who cares? What difference does it make if you report that number if things are good? Federal Reserve caused inflation to occur by putting more dollars into circulation. With a few keystrokes of the keyboard, poof, $700 million exists, poof, over half of it's over in Europe. And you add that, the total number of dollars in circulation, you divide $700 billion by that number you get, the total number of dollars in circulation, and that's the percentage by which your dollar, your value of your dollar went down from saving. And I get the anger towards Wall Street on the whole thing. You have to invest in Wall Street to keep up with inflation. that you're bailing out Wall Street because they're acting badly. And the bailout causes inflation, which is why you were invested in Wall Street to begin with, to try to stay up with inflation. Oh, wait a second. Who lost in that equation? Oh, yeah, that was us. Yeah, hi, that's us. Point is, there should be no bailouts. And bad behavior should be harshly, harshly punished. And I don't mean through laws and regulations per se, because in the case of the bank bailout, they didn't mean to. They could have just let those banks fall over and die. Well, what about the mortgages? Oh, my God. Yeah, the mortgages, when the banks went bankrupt, understand that's part of the bankruptcy process. When you go bankrupt, a judge goes through and says, okay, how much do you owe? What are your assets? And what they do is they force the entity going bankrupt to sell those assets. And because it is a forced sale, they do not go for full market value. On top of the fact that the market had just started to crash anyway, so the market value was going down anyhow. Remember all our house prices, our house values went down? Yeah, that was happening. So the point is that people who are operating proper business models see this as an opportunity to scoop up good assets, scoop up and buy at a discount those assets. And that's their reward because they were engaged in proper business practices. And the punishment for acting badly is bankruptcy. It's having to sell all of your assets and then divide what you get out of that sale amongst all the people that you owe money to. And if someone acted in a way that was bad, that caused that to happen, they can be personally, either civilly or criminally liable. The shield of a corporation is there, but only in so much as the corporation acts. If there's a person acting rogue, there's still liability. I think there was a little bit of both. I think there were people that were acting rogue, and I think there were organizational issues. And I think for the benefit of the country, those needed to be exposed so that everyone would know exactly what was going on. That was the real harm done by the bailouts. The real harm was that bad behavior was rewarded, good behavior was punished, and the American public was none the wiser. We've learned nothing. And we'll probably do it again. I'm way past the bottom of the hour break. We're going to take that now. Folks, when we come back, we'll take your calls. Call in at 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. If you want to talk about anything we've talked about or anything you think we should be talking about, you are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Back in just a few moments.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Charge the charge desire. distance ignored. It's off the passenger. Answer the wrong door and pick up the phone. No answers left when you're dead. Right.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, you're back. We're back. And you are listening to Liberty Unbridled here on the My View Matters radio network. I apologize, folks. I got like a cold, or maybe it's just my allergies going psycho from mowing for 8 hours today, mowing down my jungle. But a little bit out of it, and eyes are all kind of messed up and not seeing right, and sinuses are not right. So anyway, if you'd like to call in, the number here, 858-683-1326. We've got about 11 minutes left. Didn't mean to go that long in the last segment. It just happens. Anyway, so one of the interesting stories that, you know, we were touching on the bank bailouts before the break, and one of the big threats that we have today is the cronyism. It's the good old boy network. It's the big enough, you know, companies, what they say, too big to fail. The reality is there's no too big to fail. It's about, hey, my political machine is funded by XYZ, and so we need to make sure they survive, or make sure they survive. That's the game at this point. There are certain political donors, political machines, to get favors. Sometimes it's not that blatant. No, you have your Walmarts. They don't typically get involved in politics. But what they'll do is they'll come in and they'll say, hey, you know, you need to give us a tax abatement. We'll move into your city instead of the city next door. We're into your county instead of the county next door, even though they're everywhere anyway. But that's what they'll say. And yeah, you'll be able to talk about how you got this Walmart here, and now, you know, 100 new jobs in the community. I mean, check that out, right? Woohoo, look, you get the campaign on that. And so city councilors are like, sure, hey, that sounds great. Woohoo. But inadvertently what they're doing is putting the mom-and-pop shops out of business. The people in the community already, the people from that community, are going to go under. And in part, maybe that's what they want. Because remember, small business people, they talk to a lot of people. They're no dummies. Some are eccentric, but they're not stupid. The point is that when you have small business owners in a community, especially the way Kentucky works with their property taxes, what inevitably happens is if a small business, or I shouldn't say that, if a piece of property goes off the tax rolls, then the way the formula works in Kentucky is that everyone else's taxes will have to go up. Because in Kentucky, the formula is based on tax revenue, not tax rate. For whatever reason, a county suddenly took half the property in the county off the tax rolls. That would be painful, but it could be done. Everybody else would be left having to pick up the slack from the lost tax revenue, which means your taxes would go up. So essentially what happens then is that when Walmart moves in and gets an abatement, their competitors, the incumbents, the mom-and-pop shops, end up actually having to pay more in property taxes. And they have to compete against Walmart, where Walmart has a much bigger and more direct supply chain, which is not necessarily a bad thing. They didn't grow up there. Walmart doesn't care about your community. Your small business owners do. That's why I never feel bad about paying an extra buck or two. If I go to the store and go to a local place, I don't mind paying an extra dollar or two because it's local. Great story about that. Local hardware store. Had to get parts for my mower, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show. But I thought, you know what? This is an old hardware store. It's like a mom-and-pop place. This is awesome. They have one of the old key-cutting machines. Now, understand, way back in the day, I used to work in a department store. I worked in electronics, and then I worked in automotive and hardware. Actually, and sporting goods was in there, too. Anyway, the point is, they had the old key-cutting machines, the ones you had to do by hand. And there were some pretty cool things you could do with those machines because they were manual. Now, granted, if you were an idiot, you could get your finger cut off. But if you were smart, you were fine. Smart, you just had to not be an idiot. Put your finger where the cut blade was. Anyhow, the point is, you know, and I told this story to the woman that worked in the hardware store. You know, there was a guy who brought in a key, and it was broken into three pieces. And I took a piece of masking tape, and I taped the key together on one side, right? Put it basically like a puzzle, put the pieces back together. And then I took another piece of masking tape and taped the other side. And then I used an X-Acto knife, the actual blank out. And then I had to very, very carefully cut a new key. And this was all done with the understanding that there were no guarantees that, you know, hey, man, we're working with a broken key. And he's like, that's all right. And back then, keys only cost a dollar and whatever. So they, you know, they cut the key and he left. It was his only key for the car. 2 hours later, he came back. He's like, oh, my God, thank you so much. I mean, you guys are a lifesaver. Here, make me three more. We made him three more keys off of that key. Today, if you walk into a Walmart, if they have a key cutting machine, if they still do, which a lot of them seem to be getting rid of the key cutting machine, if they do, it's an automatic thing. You couldn't fix a key broken into three pieces with an automatic thing. You just couldn't do it. The amount of finesse and the very gentleness of it all, you could not do it. And personally, I always thought the hand cuts were better cut anyway. If the person cutting the key knew what they were doing, the hand cut is so much better. So this little hardware store still does hand cutting of keys. Double-sided key, I was impressed. It's really not that much more than it was 20 years ago. Oh, my gosh, it's been more than 20 years ago when I worked in a hardware store. And my point is that, you know, that hardware, I didn't work in a hardware store. I worked in a small local department store chain. But that chain died because they couldn't compete with Walmart, along with the other small local chains that used to be around here that died because they couldn't compete with Walmart. And while certainly I'm all about the free market, at the same time, it's not the free market if Walmart gets a pass on their property taxes and everybody else has to pick up the slack. That's not the free market. And I can't remember if I read this story or not last week, but, you know, the Advocates for Self-Government had a article, America's Real Welfare Queens, the Fortune 500 company that pay almost no taxes. And in fact, get government grants, not just contracts, but grants. General Electric, $380 million. General Motors, $370 million. Apparently you need the word general in your name. General something, you'll get a lot of money. Boeing, $264 million. Archer Daniels Midland, $174 million. United Technologies, $160 million. These were supposed to be Small Business Administration loans. They're not small business. A couple of other talk show hosts talking about this here recently. I can't remember which ones it was. It was over the air. But they were talking about specific franchises getting these small business loans and going under and not paying back the loans because they're out of business. And I don't know. My opinion, we should stop dorking with the free market. If there's a market for something, somebody's going to do it. Unless government sets up barriers to keep them from doing it. Unless government creates too many regulations, too much red tape, too much of a hassle to bother. But if someone has a dream, someone has an idea, if someone has a better way to build a mousetrap, or a way to build a better mousetrap, the right way to say that, someone will do it if government doesn't get in their way. And that's really the problem today. You know, you could try to make the case, and I would still be against it, but you could make the case that, well, you know, some regulations are necessary. I mean, what would happen if a small coal mining outfit, like, dumped 70 gajillion tons of sludge into a river? I mean, he couldn't even pay for that. Okay. But we've gone from some sort of doomsday straw man scenario, the absolute most ridiculous scenarios, the tiny little whatever, why do you care about this? Oh, because you're justifying your job. Okay. Scenarios. And that's the problem. I can't tell you the number of times we've beat this to death on the show, and I just noticed we're out of time. But we've got to get control of the regulations. We need to get the chains off of us. We are slaves to the bureaucracy, the unwritten, uncontrolled fourth branch of government. We're slaves to it. We need to throw off those chains, and it can be done through legislation. It can be done through executive action, oftentimes. A legislature can simply defund it. An executive can just simply say, we're not going to do it. For that matter, a judiciary can rule, hey, these people don't have the power to tell you to do squat. But it takes someone to stand up and do it. And that's what we don't have right now. Folks, that's the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week. for another edition of Liberty Unbridled here on the My View Matters Network. And in the meantime, turn into the rest of the shows Monday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. All great shows, all great hosts. Folks, thanks for tuning in, listening on podcast. Tune in live next time. We'd like to hear from you. And until next time, have a good week. Thanks, everybody.